What did we say about that? We said that doesn't work because it never happens anyplace else. You never see that anywhere in rabbinic literature or in the New Testament at all, or in the Church Fathers for that matter. Nobody ever calls the prophets Jeremiah. So that's a stretch, you know? Okay. The third one, and this was the one I liked, was that there is a source compendium that Matthew is drawing from, which combines different prophecies that are fulfilled in some way or another in the life of Messiah. And Matthew has this source, and he's incorporating these into his gospel. And so this was an explanation suggested by a scholar who looked at this. And I liked it because it sounded to me really plausible in terms of the way that we see Matthew and all the synoptic gospel writers, you know, all the gospel writers composing. So to review that a little bit, and I know it seems like maybe we're getting a little bit off the subject of 26 reasons, but not at all. This is really, really critical to dealing with these gospel objections in 26 reasons. We're not off the subject. Our gospel writers did use sources. How do we know? What do you think? Yes, they quote sources. For sure they quote the Tanakh. But how do we know that they're not just sitting down writing from memory and then we saw them walking on the water or something like this? But that they're actually using other sources to put... Luke says he does, exactly. Right off the bat, Luke says, you know, I compiled a lot of sources. Everybody else had kind of messed it up and I wanted to get the story straight, so I compiled a lot of sources. That's kind of the introduction of Luke, isn't it? So Luke says he used sources, and what else? How else do we know? Remember we talked about the Q document? This is how the synoptics works. Synoptic, you can figure out what that means. Syn is same, and like synonym, and optic is eye. So synoptic is see the same, seen the same. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, they're all pretty much the same. They're seen the same. They see the same. They seem the same. But they are different, aren't they? Mark is, most according to most scholars, except those of the Jerusalem Synoptic School, under, we'll just forget about that for a second, but... Most scholars believe that Mark is the first one. We talked about how in church tradition, John Mark, the disciple of Peter, writes out the Gospel of Mark for the Roman believers. Luke and Matthew, both, as they sit down to write their version of the Gospel, they have a copy of Mark. And that's their mother text. And that's what creates the synoptic effect. It's like, well, this seems a lot like what I read, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, because they're both copying from, so you got a picture of the pyramid. Here's Mark, and then over here, Matthew and Luke copying from Mark. However, there's another point on this square now, I don't know, whatever it is, trapezoid, and that is that Matthew and Luke have another shared source that Mark doesn't have. How can we tell? Because they have identical material from each other that they're drawing from someplace else. But scholars can tell that they're not copying each other, incredibly. I don't know how they do that. But they can tell that they share yet another source. What is this source? It is the stuff that is in both Matthew and Luke, but not in Mark. That's what it is. Okay. And we call that Q. That source is called Q. So these are written sources. Mark is a written source, And Q is a written source. So we already know that we're dealing with written sources. Now, Matthew is supposed to, according to church tradition, have not even been written in Greek. According to church tradition, the original real gospel of Matthew, we don't even have. Church tradition says the real gospel of Matthew was written by, that was actually written by Matthew, the disciple of the master, was written in Hebrew, or Aramaic. Because the church fathers called Aramaic Hebrew. But it could have been either. Could have been either Hebrew or Aramaic. That's the real Matthew. So it's possible that our Matthew also has Hebrew Matthew. And he's using Hebrew Matthew as yet another source, and that might be why Greek Matthew gets the name Matthew, because he's borrowing from Hebrew Matthew. Make sense? All right. No? Okay. I'm suggesting that the Greek Gospel of Matthew that's in our Bibles, that the guy who wrote this, he had Mark, he had Q, and Q might be Hebrew Matthew, or a translation of it.
And if not,
he might have had yet another document that was Hebrew Matthew, or a translation of Hebrew Matthew. All right. And because he has this access to this source, that's why his gospel picks up the name Matthew. Even though it's not Matthew, it's Mark with a bunch of other stuff. You know, right?
Would have been the translation in Greek, what would have been Matthew in Hebrew?
Mm-hmm.
He took on that responsibility but called it Matthew because he made the Greek translation.
Yes, except that he didn't. That would be exactly correct, except that he didn't do that. He started with Mark as his base text. So that's why I'm suggesting it's called Matthew, why Matthew is called Matthew. All right, why am I telling you all this? To confuse you? No. I want you to love the Gospels. I want you to love them and to just want to wallow in them and compare them and take delight in saying, oh, but Matthew has this, but Luke has this, and you know, just to revel in every discrepancy and not let this guy freak you out when he says, well, you know, Matthew has it this way and Luke has it this way and Mark has it that way. It's like, yeah, that's the whole reason we have multiple gospels, is, you know, because the church fathers said, look, all these are valuable. All of these preserve valuable, authentic traditions of the apostolic community. All right, so that's why I'm telling you that. And I'm also telling you this in order to help us solve our Jeremiah Zechariah riddle. Yes?
Would it be accurate then, given that explanation, to call aspects of the Gospels sort of a research paper?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Dan, this is kind of fascinating because everything you're telling me I heard in seminary, but your explanation of it is better than most of the professors I had.
See? Now you guys should remember how much you would pay for a seminary class, and you don't forget that box by the door.
In the 1800s, the Germans were kicking this around and doing a lot of research on this, and the reason they called it Q is because in German the word for source is Quelle.
Right, that's right.
You know, they weren't using any big highfalutin term. They, well, there's got to be another Quelle, another source, and it became called Q.
Which is short for source.
Mm-hmm. You said that these are actual documents. Is this source, this Q source, actually a physical document that can be...
Not anymore. No, it does not exist. It did. We can surmise that it did exist because they're both drawing from it.
Well, look for it.
Well, you know, we're looking. All we seem to find is those stupid Gnostic Gospels, but...
The one thing that you mentioned about Matthew and Luke where they're quoting it but they can't say for sure why, I can't remember which one is which, but Matthew or Luke prefers direct discourse and the other one prefers indirect discourse as they quote from Q. So their wording is different in the Greek, but it's so very similar.
Yeah.
Direct versus indirect, and it's you know, very minor differences.
Right. Yeah. And these guys who do this kind of work are extremely, extremely smart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, so this is a little bit of how we got our Gospels, at least our Synoptic Gospels. But there's one more layer here that needs to be added, and that is the strength of oral tradition. That also, at this time, there is a lot of oral tradition floating around. And any one of the Gospel writers will pick up these oral traditions and also incorporate those into his text. Good, great, in fact. Now, that's the Gospels. Let's take a look at the Apostles and the Prophets. A couple texts. Flip around with me. Go to 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 10. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 10. And somebody shall read that nice and loud. Really loud so that it picks up on this recorder.
1 Peter 1:10.
Yes.
As to this salvation, the prophets who prophesied of the grace that would come to you made careful search and inquiry.
Yes, keep reading.
Seeking to know what person or time the Spirit of Christ within them was indicating, as he predicted, the sufferings of Christ and the glories to follow.
Okay. I think one more verse.
It was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves.
Yes.
But you. In these things which now have been announced to you through those who preach the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit, sent from heaven, things into which angels long to look.
Okay, this is great, because what you just read is the apostolic era hermeneutic, the way that they looked at the Bible. They looked at it this way. They said, the writers of the Bible, yes, they were writing about literal things and that sort of thing in their day and age and making prophecies and predictions, but within them, within each of the prophets, the Spirit of Messiah was also writing to you and to me, because we live at the culmination of the ages, the days of the coming of Messiah. And so everything that's written beforehand, Paul says it this way, everything that was written beforehand was written to instruct you. And in the book of Acts, he says, Peter says in the book of Acts, he says, of him, of Messiah, all the prophets bear witness. So the idea is that everything must be relevant in some way or another to this generation, the apostolic generation. So I'll give you an example of how they did this in Acts chapter 1.